Nicholas Parsons draws a deep breath to exclaim,
"Welcome to Just a Minute." Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my pleasure to welcome my many listeners in this country and, of course, throughout the world, but also to welcome to the programme for talented and skillful players of the game who've come together to show their verbal ingenuity and dexterity, their comic inventiveness as they speak on a subject that I give them, and they try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. And they are seated on my right, Paul Merton and Clement Freud, and seated on my left, Julian Clary and Pauline McLean. Would you please welcome all four of them? Beside me sits Charlotte Davis, who's going to help me keep a note of the score, and she'll blow a whistle when the 60 seconds are up. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from Greenwich Theatre. Let's begin this show with Clement Freud. Clement, the dome. Tell us something about the dome. In Just a Minute, starting now.
A dome is a hemispheric structure, traditionally, architecturally...
That's the effect the dome has on everybody.
Yeah.
Julian, you challenge.
Hesitation, I'd have
Yes,
thought.
It was hesitation. So you have 53 seconds available. The dome, starting now.
The dome is a triumph of architectural design, but what are people going to do with it, we wonder? I know, we could play table tennis there. I'll be the red bat, you can be the blue bat, and we can...
And Clement, challenge.
Bat.
Too many bats. Clement, you've got the subject back. You have a correct challenge, a point, of course. The dome is with you now. 42 seconds, starting now.
It is Coptic, Byzantine, and St. Paul's, the British Museum, are fine examples. Now, in Greenwich, there is a dome which was erected for the Festival of Britain in whenever it was. And I remember the first occasion because everybody was stuck in the underground stations.
Paul Challenge.
I don't think this was for the Festival of Britain.
No, it wasn't.
That was 1951, wasn't it?
That was 1951. The Festival of Britain was 1951.
Yeah. So it's deviation.
It was deviation, yes. Yeah. Clement, it was an incorrect statement, and Paul Merton had a correct challenge, and he has the dome with 21 seconds to go, starting now.
Of course, the Labour Party were blamed, but I believe it was the Tories who first came up with the idea of a Millennium Dome, and there it is indeed, striking in on the...
Julian challenged.
Stumbling, generally hesitating.
That's right. Yeah. We call that hesitation, Julian. So you have the subject, everybody so far speaking on this one, and you have a point, 9 seconds still available. The dome starting now.
It's a dreadful thing. I think it's an awful mistake that it was ever built in the first place.
And Paul challenged.
This is deviation. A minute ago you were saying it was wonderful. Now he's saying it's
dreadful.
I've had a rethink.
Is he allowed to do that?
I think, yes, actually. I mean, it's devious from what he said before.
Yeah, isn't it?
On the other hand, he can change his mind, can't he?
So,
yes, I would have thought so.
All right.
I think I have to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
I'll try to redress it if I can, Paul,
nice.
Later. 5 seconds. The dome with you, Julian, starting now.
The good thing about it is that you can see it from an aeroplane.
Well, hang on a minute. It's good, it's bad, the good thing. I mean, you know... There's no consistent line here
no,
at all.
This time...
Knock it down, celebrate it. What, you know, what's going on?
No, it's all right, Paul. You made
it's
it
all
part.
Over the place.
You have it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. You made it. And you have 3 seconds and another point, of course, the dome, starting now.
Think of an upside-down wok, and that is the dome.
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Paul Merton, and you won't be surprised to hear at the end of that round he's got a strong lead over the other three. And the sex subject is, oh, it's a lovely subject, malapropisms. Julian, will you start us off on this one? 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
Like an alligator on the banks of the Nile is a fine example of a malapropism, although...
No, Pauline Challenge.
It's not. The line you're thinking of is like an allegory on the banks of the Nile.
That's correct.
An alligator might well be seen on the banks of the Nile.
You made your point, darling.
Oh, sorry, I'm just banging at home,
know.
You know. I'm learning from Paul Merton.
You've learned none of that, but you're displaying your knowledge as well. Well done. You have a point for a correct challenge. I should explain to our listeners this is only the second time that Pauline McLean has played this game. and so she's thrilled to be in with the subject. And there are 55 seconds and a point, of course. Malapropism starting now.
My dad used to drink in a bar called Brennan's on the docks in Galway, and he had a friend who once accused my mother of having her metropause. That same guy tried to tell us a story once about buying a sack of potatoes, but he didn't have any money, so he also was looking for some collateral with which to swap them. He was a marvellous man for malapropisms. Of course...
Julian, challenge.
Repetition of man.
Oh, yes.
Well, you can't have enough of them, really, can you?
Correct challenge, Julian. 33 seconds. Tell us something about malapropism starting now.
I once saw Hilda Baker at the Lewisham Concert Halls, obviously before she died, and she was very big on malapropisms, and she came out and she said, "What are you insinuating?" Which amused me no end, and she also said things like...
Clement, challenge.
Two sids.
He said, she said. Clement, correct challenge, malapropisms, and there are 18 seconds starting now.
Mrs. Malaprop was a character in Sheridan's The Rivals and liked using long words and got them wrong because she had hardly any intelligence at all. She preferred...
Paul challenge. Well,
we had an R there, which is generally hesitation. Hesitation.
There was a hesitation, definitely, Paul. So you have malapropisms, and you have 6 seconds starting now.
Hilda Baker, as Julian mentioned, was famous for this. She'd say, "There I was, lying prostitute on the ground." And that was the one of hers, and everybody roared.
On this occasion, Paul Merton was again speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point, and with others in the round, he's increased his lead at the end of the round. Pauline, it's your turn to begin. The subject is how to improve your self-esteem. You have 60 seconds, as usual, starting now.
I think the only true way to improve your self-esteem is to trash other people. I think if you belittle the other person so much, you'll start to feel better about yourself. Another way of improving your self-esteem is to buy clothes that are at least 2 sizes too big. In that way, you can say, "Oh, look at this, it's hanging off me." And people will say, "You have lost so much weight, you look fantastic," thereby improving your self-esteem. I find if I make up a CV...
Clement challenge.
Yes, sir, second, I find, friend.
Yes, you are finding too much.
I just search in life so much. Too much, you're
I
right.
I know, but they love what you said. You had them hanging on the edge of their seats.
I gave some good tips there,
you
didn't
did.
I?
You did. Clement, a correct challenge, and you've got how to improve your self-esteem. 29 seconds starting now.
A very good way of improving your self-esteem is to become a serial suicide bomber. It is quite extraordinary if you say, "This is my third go." How impressed people are. There are obviously other ways of improving your self-esteem, like buying larger clothes and making people think that you've lost weight. Goodness.
Pauline challenge.
Speaking, he's repeating a tip that I gave
I
there
know
earlier,
was.
Isn't he? I know, not in the same words, but same subject. I know. You know
the
what I mean?
The trouble is, within the rules of just a minute, you can repeat what other people have said.
These rules need to be looked at. That's all I'll say. After all these years, they need to be looked at.
Clement, it was an incorrect challenge, so you get a point for that, and you keep the subject. 7 seconds. How to improve your self-esteem starting now.
Perhaps the very best way of improving your self-esteem is to listen what other people say, and when their challenges are accepted, you get a point.
Clement, the end of that round, you were speaking as the whistle went. You gained that extra point, and you are now just 2 points behind Paul Merton, who's in the lead. Julian Clary and Pauline McLinn are following equal, and Paul, your turn to begin. The subject is my life as a tattooist. I don't know if this is something that others know about, that we've never heard of, but tell us something about that side of your life, if you can, starting now.
Well, clearly, I've never worked as a tattooist, so as soon as I begin to talk on this subject, somebody can get me on deviation. I opened my first booth on Blackpool Pier in 1978. I've tattooed all the stars, Jim Davison's arse, Tom Cruise's head. I've done the lot. You look at Shirley Bassey, there's no skin left on that woman. She's one great big tattoo. From the front, you can see St. Paul's Cathedral. When she bends over, you can see the Acropolis. It's wonderful. What a woman. When she She's up on stage bringing Hey Big Spender. You can just move a bra strap there and, oh, you can see Big Ben. It's wonderful. It's always on time as well. How do you manage to do it? I've got no idea. Another one for it is Michael Aspel. When you see him on Antiques Roadshow, you wouldn't know, but underneath his hair, he's got a thing that says Hell's Angel Suicide Squad, which he had done in 1968 when he first hosted a Miss World contest. Of course, lots of us remember Nicholas Parsons in the old days, and I wonder what happened to him. It's amazing, isn't it, when you look at all the people around the days, you look at Julian Clary, wonderful figure of a man, but did you know that if he bends over, you can see, well, I shouldn't really go into that, but what... It's extraordinary. Bruce Forsyth has actually got the Brooklyn Bridge from one side of his nipple to the other. And it's fantastic. When he gets up at night, he can say, oh, I don't know what I'm talking about. How long has it been going on?
For someone who's never been a tattooist, that was brilliant. I was very naughty there, Paul. I took the whistle out of Charlotte's mouth and...
Please, not in front of the children.
And you went for 75 seconds. So you get a point.
That's
for speaking.
That's about average, all right, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah. Oh, Pauline. You get a point for speaking when the whistle should have gone.
Yeah.
And you get a bonus point for not being interrupted. And you get another point for speaking for the extra 15 seconds. And... as a real tour de force and one of the great moments of Just a Minute, and you increased your lead at the end of the round, Paul and Clement, would you take the next round? The subject is a recipe for disaster. 60 seconds starting now.
I would say that a recipe for disaster is to give a pound of meat to Anthony Worrell Thompson and watch him blow it. There are other recipes for disaster, and I could go on mentioning the people we see on cookery programmes. Take, for instance, half a pound of allspice. And you have a disaster because...
Julian Clary Challenge.
Repetition of pound.
Yes, a pound of... Hmm? Right. So, Julian, well, listen, 38 seconds, a recipe for disaster starting now.
My mother once made a chocolate cake using Bisto, and Auntie Tess... was the first person to have a mouthful, and she said, very nice, dear. And then the three children, myself and my sisters, Frances and Beverly, filled our gobs, and we all spat it out on the floor. My mother said, eat it, you ungrateful little brats. And
Paul Challenge.
Oh, repetition of mother.
It was a repetition of mother.
Oh, yes. Mm.
My mother, and a recipe for disaster is with you, Paul, and there are 17 seconds starting now.
If you give Nicholas Parsons the contents of a bottle of whiskey, then dress him in women's clothing and set him out on the streets of Carlisle on a Friday night, then you've got some idea of how he spent his last weekend. What a recipe for disaster. I had to go down...
It's a recipe for getting a cheap laugh and a round of applause. Right. But, Paul, they loved it, and you kept going to the wisdom.
I don't think it's a cheap laugh at all.
All right.
I think we're telling people what it's really like up here.
An expensive laugh, because you've increased your lead at the end of that round. And, Julian, it's your turn to begin. The subject is the London Marathon. It's just happened recently, just not long before this recording.
Oh, and that sort of marathon.
Mm. You can take the subject in any way you wish. 60 seconds are available starting now.
Yes, I was there jogging away like the rest of them, but never again. All those sweaty bodies and vests, every colour of the rainbow. I know it raises a lot of money for very worthy charities, but in future I will spend my marathon Sunday afternoon doing something a bit more constructive, like a crossword puzzle or a Sudoku, which may take me a bit more time than the act.
Well, we've deviated. We're wandering away from the subject of the marathon. We're talking about Sudoku.
I'm just weaving my way back to it, which may take me longer than the marathon.
Yes, yes, yeah.
He's saying, what? Right. 36 seconds, the London Marathon, still with you, Julian, starting now.
The thing to do is eat a banana before you go, because that brings up your...
brings up your banana level, doesn't it?
Clement Jones.
Hesitation.
There was a hesitation. Yes, Clement, you have 30 seconds now. The London Marathon starting now.
When people said, how is it possible that you at your age can do the marathon, I had to tell them I have the body of a boy of 18. in my refrigerator.
Paul Jones.
I was going to say deviation, but I do know that Clement does have the body of an 18-year-old boy in his refrigerator, so... I've seen him. Simon, I remember that party round at Clement's place, and he says, the drink's are in the fridge, and by the way, say hello to Simon. He's an 18-year-old boy I keep in there.
Right. You actually challenged before he said about the people in the fridge. But anyway, 19 seconds, the London Marathon starting now.
I've got a new boyfriend at the moment. He lives in Clement's fridge, but I've dug a tunnel. So I get in the back of that particular implement, and there we are. We have a kiss amongst the ice cubes. And...
Julian Charles.
It's deviation.
Why?
Well, what's he talking about?
I'm kissing the boy behind the ice cube.
Yes, he's gone off into the world of fantasy, which is actually utterly devious. If you want to interpret...
Hang on a minute. This 18-year-old boy wasn't devious when he was Clement. Now I start kissing him and then it's devious.
I know.
Actually...
You've never liked Simon, have you? Have you? You've never liked him. You've never liked Simon.
It's an impossible game to judge on, in a way. If he's in his fantasy mode, is he allowed to go and have anything? Or do you like something?
Actually, he's dead.
What? Simon's dead?
Simon is dead.
Clement, you could have broken it to me in a better way than this. I thought he'd gone quiet.
Paul Merton gets 2 bonus points. One because he was saying, one for that extra remark. Julian, you get a correct challenge of deviation, so you get a point for that. You take the subject, 12 seconds available, the London Marathon starting now.
Fill your jockstrap with fresh fruit is my tip if you're going to run a marathon, and I have the name Simon across my back, which seems...
Paul Challenge.
You liar. You don't know Simon. Simon's my friend.
But he's dead.
Oh, don't rub it in. I'm just trying to forget about that. For God's sake, are you inhuman?
I think just a minute's gone into a realm that it's never approached before. Oh, we're stuck in the fantasy world. So, Paul.
He doesn't know Simon. He's talking about Simon as if he knows him.
Right, there we are. Another bonus to Paul because we enjoy what he said. Point to you because you've got a correct challenge.
Oh, thank
you. And you have the subject of Simon. I mean, no, you don't. You have the. Let's change it. There's only 4 seconds to go. Talk about Simon for 4 seconds, starting now.
It's a thankless task talking about Simon for 4 seconds because it's hard to achieve anything.
So Julian Clary was speaking when the whistle went, gained that extra point. And I'll give you the situation then. Paul Merton is still, with all his tattooing and other things he'd been saying, way out in a strong lead. But Clement Freud and Julian Clare are equal in second place, and Pauline McLean is bringing up in a very strong fourth place. And, and Pauline, it's your turn to begin. My family. Tell us something about my family in this game, starting now.
I'm quite nervous talking about my family tonight because some of them are here in the audience, but I would have to say that, like everybody else's, mine are a shower of bastards. There's no doubt that my family say some of the most horrible things to me that anybody in their right or wrong minds would attempt. When I was growing up, my brothers liked to call me Hook Nose or Veruca Head, and as a result, I don't have any vanity, I'll tell you that for nothing. They are my feet of clay. So much so that I have agreed with my husband that our children, which would be my family, my new family, are such an ungrateful shower of brats that we've decided not to have them. That will teach them a lesson. Oh.
Paul Challenge.
Repetition of shower.
Oh. You said it at the beginning and you said it again.
It's a rather unusual word, so.
Yeah. Well, the way I use it anyway, the way I mangle it, it's unusual, but it's repetitive.
Yes, and you kept going for 41 seconds.
Oh, darn.
So the audience applause and means that you're entitled to an extra bonus point. Paul had a correct challenge. He was listening well. You did have the shower of your own family at the beginning, and then your unborn family had a shower as well. And 19 seconds are available for my family with you, Paul, starting now.
My family are a rather extraordinary bunch of people. Take, for example, my father.
Clement Challenge.
Hesitation.
Hesitation, yeah, Clement, yeah. Correct. 13 seconds are still available. You tell us something about my family, starting now.
I have a father and a mother, 5 children, 15 grand ditto, And they're really very nice people, all of them. I put their addresses and their dates of birth into my diary. This is extremely boring.
Yeah, wait a minute, no, Pauline, challenge. Yes, Pauline.
There.
Yes, repetition of there.
There, this, there, that. Oh.
Well, listen, Pauline, you were right on the ball there. And you got in with half a second to go.
Half a second.
And you have my family starting now.
I'd like to apologise to my family.
Julian McLinn was speaking as the whistle went. He gained that extra point and he joined Julian Clary and Clement Freud in second place. They're still training Paul Merton, who's still in the lead. And the next subject is, I'll just get the cards out. Ooh, catchphrases. Yes, Paul, will you start us on this one? 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
Catchphrases are a useful device in comedy because if you say the same thing over and again, people recognise it and respond to it. Julian Clary appeared in a show called Sticky Moments that I co-wrote with him, and one week we decided to do a catchphrase, which was basically Julian would say, it's not... Oh.
Yes. Clement, you challenge.
Julian was repeated.
Yes, was repeated, yes. 45 seconds, catchphrases, Clement, starting now.
I do not have a catchphrase.
Paul challenge.
Well, that's a lot of nonsense. Give us it in cash. That's your catchphrase at the end of every show.
Clement, you have the benefit of the doubt from
and
Paul.
A point.
And you have a point, yes.
Oh.
And give him another point for an incorrect challenge. And he has 41 seconds, catchphrases, starting now.
I like Bruce Forsyth best. He says, nice to see you, and I can't tell you what else goes on, because it would be a repetition. There are all sorts of artists of no great talent who use catchphrases simply so people will know who they are and won't have to look up the Radio Times cast list and say, I remember the looks of that person, but I simply cannot recall what his moniker is. And therefore, catchphrases are hugely important. What does he do? People say he has a catchphrase.
There was a hesitation.
There was a hesitation.
I thought
there,
the
yes.
whistle might blow. Seemed to me I've been going on for a long time.
I tell you what, Charlotte does the whistle differently to...
Yeah,
Janice
2 minutes.
Yes. She doesn't put it up to her mouth with about 10 seconds to go, which Janet used to do, and you used to watch her out of the corner of your eye.
Oh.
Because there's still 9 seconds available, Paul, because you had a correct challenge on catchphrases starting now.
Arthur Askey had a huge number of catchphrases, which was extraordinary because he was a little man. I remember he used to say, thank you very much, which is something he got off of Liverpool.
Pauline, challenge.
I think he said the word used twice.
Yes, but he didn't say thank you very much. He said, nay, thank you.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, both repetition and lies.
I think Nick...
That's what I'm calling
it. So, Pauline, you are amazing. You've got in once again with half a second to go. Catchphrases starting now.
I once had a catchphrase.
So, at the end of that round... And I might tell you, by the way, we're moving into the final round, which will follow. Oh, yes. Well, what a wave of warmth and sympathy came there. And and maybe relief. I don't know. But
it's a fine line well, being in an audience fine... or a hostage situation. I know. You see, and they know it now.
I know, and they can't get out. In this situation, at the present moment, Pauline McLinn, who was only second time she's played the game, is in a very strong... second place alongside Clement Freud. They're only 1 point ahead of Julian Clary, but out in the lead, a very strong lead, is Paul Merton as we move into the final round. And I think it should be, it's called parental advice. Clement, would you start us on this one? 60 seconds, starting now.
I never got a lot of parental advice. I remember once when I was at prep school in Devon, my mother sent a telegram saying, start worrying, letter follows. And I think anyone...
So you did press your buzzer.
Hesitation.
There was a hesitation, yes. And he...
I should point out that Clement told me to buzz.
Right. He's
so I did.
He's satisfied with a laugh, and that's enough. Right. 44 seconds are available. Parental advice, Paul, with you starting now.
Whatever you do, always be happy. That's what my dad said to me. If only.
Oh, right. So, Julian, you challenged.
That was another sort of hesitation.
Yes. I know, he broke up at the thought of it, didn't he? Right. And you've got in on parental advice with 39 seconds to go. Put Julian starting now.
When I was 16, I followed my father's advice, which was to join the army. And after a couple of hours of drilling on the forecourt, I quite got the taste for it. I did find the uniform.
Paul, challenge.
Drilling on the forecourt? The army?
Yes. Have you never been?
Parade ground? Yes. Forecourt?
No, the forecourt.
Well, like a garage forecourt. Training on the forecourt.
No, there was a forecourt.
Get up, men. We're training on the forecourt. Mm-hmm. No.
No, they do traditionally drill on the drill on parade ground.
Yes, that's right.
But
yes,
it could possibly be that when Julian joined up at the particular establishment to which he went, they didn't have a drill ground, so they said, right, chaps, we're going to do it here on the forecourt.
That's what happened.
Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it's perfectly possible.
And so he's never looked back.
Never looked back. So you have the benefit of the doubt, Julian, and you have 26 seconds parental advice starting now.
When they showed me into the dormitory, they said, which bunk, top or bottom? I said, let me get unpacked first. And then we passed into the proper drilling area, and so the work...
As much as I'm enjoying the drilling... It's this repetitive drilling.
There's too much drilling, yes.
And I'm enjoying it, but hey, we have to call a halt somewhere.
That's all we did.
You have to get in and talk on it, Sir Pauline, which you've done, with 14 seconds available. Parental advice starting now.
I wish James Thurber had been my father, because the parental advice he would have given was never eat anything bigger than your head. All my mother ever told me was never lick a steak knife.
Clement Freud challenge.
Repetition of never.
Never.
Yep.
And he said never, never. So, Clement, you have got the subject back again, and you've got 4 seconds available. Parental advice starting now.
My parents took me into a baby changing room, which I felt very badly about.
Well, Clement Freud was then speaking as a whistle when gained that extra point for doing so. He moved forward a bit. He finished up in second place. He's just ahead of Julian Clary and Pauline McLinn in, they were together almost equal in third place. But out in the lead with quite a number of points more than the rest was Paul Merton. So we say, this week, Paul, you are our winner. So, thank you. It's for delightful players of the game, Paul Merton, Julian Clary, Pauline McLinn and Clement Freud. I thank Charlotte Davis, who's helped me with the score. She's blown her whistle elegantly for me, and she's also our producer, Claire Jones. We are indebted to her for her skill and expertise, and we're deeply indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this lovely game. And we're grateful to this lovely audience here at Greenwich Theatre who've cheered us on our way. And from our panel, and from me, Nicholas Parsons, don't forget, tune in the next time we take to the air and we play Just a Minute.